This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQBar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.
Hello, and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, in this episode, I'm going to do something a little bit different. At the weekend, I went to something called the Witan. Now, the Witan is an old English sort of gathering of wise men and the king, and they would get together in ye olde times, and have a discussion about what direction the country needed to go in and what needed to be done. That has been revived, and base people like me and Carl and other good characters that you know from this channel went along to that, and so what follows is a series of interviews with some of the characters that were there. We had lots of speakers, lots of attendees, fascinating discussions both in the conference hall and also outside of it. I'm not going to show you the speeches themselves, nor am I even going to give you all of the interviews that were done with the various people, because basically we don't have enough time. There was so much going on this weekend, but I have pulled out a couple of people that I think would be interesting to catch up with. One was Morgoth of Morgoth Review. I had a chat with him. I had a chat with good old Alex Masters, who you remember from the election stream. An interesting German chap who gave a very good talk on, the extrapolating from first principle physics, what it meant for the energy system, and therefore, politics is downstream of energy, and all sorts of fascinating. Well, he explains it better than I do. And also, there were a couple of representatives of the Homeland Party there, which is a new party which a lot of the audience keep telling me to check out, and I just don't know anything about them. But I did sit down with a couple of their chaps just to find out what on earth is going on there. So you can find out about them if you don't already know. So enjoy this series of interviews, and if you think that's the sort of thing that you would like to be a part of, well, maybe you should book a ticket to next year's Witan. Let's check them out. Hello, so I'm here in a secret location with Maven Politics, just off screen. I'm going to ask you the big question, Maven. Why are we here?
We're here because, that's a very good question actually, why are we here? We're here really to discuss the theme of the conference and New Order.
What is the conference?
This conference is the Witan. Mm-hmm. It's a conference we've run for 4 years now.
Okay.
And it's a meeting of minds from what we call the sensible centre or the academic intellectual side of people who are critical of present politics and who are not on the left, basically.
Okay.
And so we have people from, we have people that are physicists, we have artists, we have historians, we have all sorts of people all here to discuss how to create something or how to envisage something different from the world.
But what actually is a Witan? Is that some sort of Japanese manga term or something? What is it?
It's a bit older than that. So the first Witans were in England in the Anglo-Saxon times, and they were meetings of wise men and kings, basically. And so
We've
appropriated the name.
That they would get together to discuss what the nation had to do.
Basically, yeah.
And that's what we do.
Well, we try.
Excellent. So does this happen every year?
Yes, so far, and we'll be planning next year's very soon, so we already have ideas of what to do next. Mm-hmm. And yes, every year, so far, four years. Yes.
And what kind of questions is the conference trying to address?
So every year is slightly different. So last year we talked about chaos, entropy, and the problem of entropy, basically, for those who want to create an ordered system. This year we're talking about how to envisage a new world. Previously we've discussed heritage and liberty. So every year is slightly different.
Okay. So, we're now, we've got one talk left to go because mm-hmm. we're doing this on the last day. I know they've all been excellent, but pick out one. Tell us about a highlight talk for you.
The highlight?
This time.
My every year we try to pick different new voices, and the two new voices this year that I liked were, in particular, were Alex Masters, who you know, if you're on Those Diseases, you'll know him, and the Shakenbacher, the Shadow Maker.
Oh, I interviewed him. Yes.
Yeah. So both of those were talking about physics, engineering, real world problems, real world you know, engineering, etc., which is a very important part of, you know, everything.
Well, they both had a similar message, didn't they? Which was essentially, you know, you can worry too much about the politics, but actually a lot of the politics stuff is downstream of real world practical stuff.
Absolutely.
And they talked a lot about the real world practical stuff, such as energy and so on, and how it's going to feed through.
Such as energy and the problem of modern physics not actually producing anything of note. We've done 70 years of particle physics, we've spent billions and billions and billions and produced nothing from the actual
diminishing returns, yeah.
So, you know, this means that the world which we are currently living, you know, it's not even the future, is going to be more is about maintaining what we have, and then therefore we should prepare for that, essentially.
So, if somebody is listening to this and thinking, well, maybe I should come along next year, what sort of person would fit into this environment, and how do they do it?
Yeah, so if you basically look at our, follow our social media pages, essentially, for Shieldings, you can spell that in the notes, it's one word.
Well, I won't be able to spell it, but somebody will.
Someone will. Yes. And if you like our headline speakers that we've had previously, you can look at our YouTube channel where you can see examples of previous speeches, and if you like them, you'll probably enjoy it. Such as him, yeah. Yes. We found you, indeed, actually, didn't we?
You did, yes. I was just lost in the wilderness before that.
I know, yes, well, you know, picked you up.
Excellent. Good. Well, it has been a fascinating event, and I look forward to the next one.
Wonderful.
Thanks very much.
Hello, I'm here at Witten 2024 with this chap, who I know. It's,
yes,
it's Alex Masters, fame of election night specials. So
yes.
Good to be back with me old mucker here. Alex, what did you talk about this year?
I talked about the title was Power-Assisted Friend-Enemy Distinction.
Right, that sounds useful.
So really, I was looking at the energy ecosystem in the country, where our energy comes from, how it's used, where it goes. But use that as a bit of a thing to talk about how quite a lot of the renewable energy thing is a scam.
Okay.
Because it doesn't deliver on its own promises.
But I mean, on energy, I mean, obviously we are now in the future.
Yes.
And from the past. So the past they had less energy and now we have more energy.
Well, you would hope that,
yes.
But actually it's not really true.
Oh.
Since the sort of mid-90s, the trend has been ever downwards.
So we're producing less energy now than we were, say, 20 years ago?
Yes, much less.
Okay.
Obviously, we've killed our coal industry.
Right.
That's dead, buried.
Yes.
The oil and gas reserves in the North Sea are largely depleted and haven't been invested in properly.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount coming out of them has dropped off massively.
Okay.
And we haven't really got anything to put back into them. They've put a lot of money into wind and solar. And
What about all of that stuff? Isn't that just going up and making up for it?
The nominal capacity is going up.
Right.
The actual amount of electricity it's making is not.
Because
only today it's overcast, so
All
those millions of solar panels are not doing anything.
Yes.
And it's not particularly windy.
No.
So.
And as you pointed out, it can also be windy at night, which is fantastic. I'm generating loads of energy, but there's nobody
everybody's
trying to
in bed. Yeah.
Nobody trying to boil a kettle.
No.
Yes.
No.
Okay. Well, is that why I've swapped out my light bulbs for these little efficient things, but my energy bill goes up anyway?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, because obviously whilst the infrastructure is not generating electricity, you still have to pay maintenance costs and pay the chaps to go around in the vans and make sure everything's greased.
Okay, but, I mean, we're governed by smart people, so what...
Nominally.
Kind of. So why is this happening?
Ultimately, it's because they are smart in the wrong places.
Right.
They know an awful lot about international relations or business management or something like that. They don't know a lot about technology.
No.
So when they look at a wind turbine, they go, oh, it's very shiny and white and it doesn't emit lots of black smoke.
Yes.
That's a nice technology.
Yes.
I don't like steelworks because it smells funny and it's very loud. And so they don't like that. It goes for a whole range of technical and non-technical issues where essentially they look at things that are existing, go, that's old, and we want progress. So we want to progress beyond the old dirty thing.
Mm.
Unfortunately, the old dirty thing is basically the foundations of all national wealth. So they just cut it out.
Okay.
And yes, end up living in a bubble.
So let's assume that you know, we're going to get to a point where this all goes horribly wrong.
Yes.
How do we make sure our friends have energy?
Well, there, fortunately, there are a number of what I call alternative energies.
Oh.
One of the statistics I managed to pull out this time was, although what they call bioenergy is a tiny, tiny fraction of the nominal capacity, it's about half of the total energy actually consumed in the country. So it's this tiny little business which is making half of all the renewable energy.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of technologies there around solid fuels, liquid fuels, gaseous fuels, and other such projects, which can be done at a local level. That's the great thing about a lot of these projects, is they've really come from... the tech has matured in the third world.
Mm.
So it's really designed, you know...
So these are actually viable on a small scale?
Yeah. I mean,
you could have a little Cornish or Devonshire-ish energy thing.
A Cornwall or Devon energy thing.
Yes.
Using, you know, your mate's farm.
And you're building the model of how this could actually work.
Yes. Yeah.
That sounds clever.
Well, we've got a national electricity grid.
Yes.
Where you can buy and sell electricity. We've got a national gas grid. Yes. We've got a pretty decent transport system around the world. And we've got, you know, tens of thousands of petrol stations.
Excellent.
So if we look at energy in terms of energy, not as a synonym for electricity, suddenly all these other things start to appear. Because if you think of energy as petrol, and then you go, well, how can I make my own petrol? And it turns out there's a bunch of processes that even the mid-century Germans were using to make their own petrol.
They're ahead of their head on things on many ways, yes.
Yes, well, you look at... you know, the late 19th century into the mid-20th century, all the chemical processes have German names.
Yes, they do, don't they?
Because they got quite good at chemistry for a number of reasons.
Yes, we should explore that. I think people already know you quite well, but just in case they don't, where can they find more of you?
You can find me all over the place, popping up in various live streams and various events. I'm Alex, that Steam Guy, on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably the best place to find me, and I put up what I'm doing with my life and where we can meet up and have a chat.
Superb. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Hello, I'm here at Witten 2024, and I have a special guest who is a lot more sensible than me about face doxing. I'm here with Morgoth.
Hello.
So, Morgoth, I've been wanting to talk to you for a while, actually, about the plight of the white working class, and I know you're not face doxing, but would it be fair to say that you're part of the white working class?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm completely, the way I talk, my mannerisms.
I
don't want to sound pretentious, but I'm a little bit different, I think. But right. I've spent a lifetime in minimum wage shit jobs, slumming it. So yeah, I'm definitely of that ilk.
Yeah, but I mean, you've been active doing your thing for a while now, haven't you?
Yeah, a long time. It was really, if you go back on that basis, I, in about 1999, I did the Gen X thing where me and my mate went backpacking, Lonely Planet and all of that. And then when we actually left the Northeast, I began to realise that the Northeast at that point was a complete bubble. And you had Daily Mail articles saying like the Northeast was 30 years behind the rest of the country and its social mores and all of that. So I grew up in a place where what today would be called racism was just normal. It was just the normal ethnocentrism.
Well, and it still is in the rest of the world.
Yeah, and then when I began to travel around more and more, I began to see that actually where I come from is actually a bubble, and it horrified us. I began to ask questions. This is before the internet, so I didn't... The point is, I immediately knew that when I arrived in Paris, it was a shithole and that something had gone really, really badly wrong.
How long ago was this?
That would be 99.
Yeah, right, okay. So before it got really bad then?
Yeah. And then I travelled all... Well, basically, I did the backpacking thing around Europe and I stayed in Europe working for a long time. And so I became very accustomed to the multicultural experience. And at this point, I remember I used to get the Sunday Times on a Monday. It was like my big read of the week, and it was massive. And I remember the first time I ever heard the term multiculturalism was in some statement by Gordon Brown in about 2004. And I knew it was bullshit straight away. I knew I'd never come across that word before, and it just jumped out at us. And I thought, nobody asked for this. What's this? Where's this coming from? And so I just never agreed with it. Anyway, I never had like a liberal phase. I was never a libertarian or anything like that. I was apolitical, taking things for granted, to sort of nationalist. I always had that in-group preference. But what I also noticed, I began to talk to people in bars about it, about, say in Belgium, it would be about the Turks that were there, and Holland, the Moroccans are. I noticed that it wasn't just that this had gone wrong. Firstly, I realised that this is coming in everywhere. So the first place I saw was France, and I thought, I can understand that one government in Europe would make a mistake, a bad policy decision. some kind of weird sort of bureaucratic mess up after French left North Africa or something. Like, okay, all right, I get that. But I couldn't see how it was repeating all over the place. Mm. And then on top of that, it was like the language that was being used was also the same to suppress dissent. So everybody was just being called racist. And for the first time, of course, I'd heard that word before, but then when I saw it in a proper context, I thought, actually, this is really bad. So what? It's illegitimate for us to speak up against an endless flow of foreigners. So eventually, I came across people like Mark Stein and the counter jihad stuff. There was a blogger called Fjordman. Of course, I remember I had a Flemish girlfriend and was sat and read his blog, and it was called, it was about Sweden. And again, I never considered that there were hundreds of thousands of people from the Middle East and moving to Sweden. That I just couldn't understand it. It just seemed mad. And he had a blog post that hit me like a bombshell, and it was called, how much is a gang rape worth to GDP? And it was like a 4,000-5,000 word essay on the carnage. This is now on 20 years ago in Sweden.
Yeah.
And I sat and read it all night on my girlfriend I had at the time on our laptop. And it was like, I was just completely sort of radicalised.
It's surprisingly low, the number. So, I mean, I worked it out for murders, and it's a couple of million, which is quite a low price to... I mean, you couldn't... If you wanted to get a hunting licence to go out and shoot random people in the street, you know, you'd be doing well to get one of those at 2 million. But that's only if you just take the actual murders. If you take all the stabbings, the crimes, the rapes, the frauds, the benefit, it breaks it down. It's actually a surprisingly vanishingly small number, and it's probably not even a positive number. In fact, I doubt it's a positive number.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing as well, because it wasn't just that you are living lovey-dovey and everybody's the same and everybody loves each other, but then there's stabbings and murder sometimes. There's say you don't move just from 1 to 10, you actually hover around a 6 or a 7. And there's always like this look that I always saw in with me real eyes in the real world, kind of things that didn't quite make sense. So I worked with a couple of black lads, and mobile phones were just coming in with photographs on, and they both had white Dutch girlfriends, and they both had like pornographic imagery of their girlfriends on their phones, and they were swapping it and showing each other what they'd made her do last night. And to me, and I was incensed by that, but what it also told me is that like they didn't come, they had a bond with each other there, which was obviously
stronger than the bond with her.
Yes.
Yes.
So, I was thinking, like, in-group, out-group kind of preferences. At this time as well, this is funny going back, but I heard that Richard Dawkins was like, he doesn't take any prisoners, and he says it as it is. Because I'd read a lot on history and things. And I've actually read almost Richard Dawkins' entire canon, like the old stuff about genetics.
Yeah, I read it, yeah.
And he had one called The Ancestor's Tale, and it's massive. and I read the whole thing. And you start off as like a microbe and you work your way into like a primitive fish, and then, you know, yeah. And he's expert. And I thought, I'm going to go through all the way through this, and at the end, because Richard Stawkins tells the truth, he's going to explain human evolution and why there is differences in humans. And yes. I got all the way through and I was like, oh, we're at the yeah. badgers. We're moving on to the yeah. monkeys, and then we're chimpanzees. And then it was like, oh, it's coming. I know the answer to me questions is coming. And then it was like, and then Homo sapiens were born, the end. And I was like, okay, yeah. that's shit.
You need to read your Ed Dutton at least.
For, yeah. yeah, I'm get not getting the answers from the mainstream. Why is it? Yeah. So then you begin to think, why not? Why if it, you begin, everything begins to fall away from your eyes. I can obviously see there's differences between like a Chinese man and an African. And that's not, I'm not applying any kind of value to that.
Yeah.
It's just a statement of fact. And if you have just read all of this evolutionary theory, and which is based on, you know, adapting to your climate and conditions,
yeah,
then we've got different climates and conditions.
Yeah,
and it was that what I was coming up against was this idea where, you know, the libtard thing where there's no, like, everybody is like, yeah. As soon as everybody left Africa, everything stopped, because
yes.
500,000 years later. Yeah. Marxist theory would need to explain that away, and they couldn't do yeah. that, so they just kind of conveniently stopped the evolution.
Yes. It's like, yes, we have bears, but you don't take a whole load of panda bears and brown bears and stick them in the Antarctic or the Arctic, whatever you want. You
yeah.
know, yeah.
Because if there is these conditions hard baked into humanity, then you're never going to get equality, because yeah. there's too much difference.
You've spoken recently about a bit of nostalgia of the 90s as middle-aged men are inclined to do, look back on their younger years and think the world was great back then. But I mean, it was a bit different. And then I remember the sort of the narrative on the sort of non-white groups was, well, these people are a bit at disadvantage, and we're gonna help them up a bit. But it was generally sort of background. These days, it's quite blatant. They despise. I'm not sure I'd necessarily want to say, and maybe you would, they despise all whites, but they certainly hate the white working class. What is it about the white working class that infuriates our leaders so much?
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQBar. Your favorite clean, functional, delicious nutrition brand is raising the bar with a little help from Thomas Keller, Michelin star chef of the French Laundry. IQ Bar and Thomas Keller have teamed up to create a salted caramel chip protein bar and yuzu mango hydration mix. With toasted macadamia nuts, rich caramel flavor, and brain-boosting nutrients, this bar is like having a Michelin star meal in your pocket. Pair it with the taste bud tingling yuzu mango IQ Mix hydration mix, packed with magnesium and adaptogens to improve clarity and mood. With Keller's culinary excellence and IQ Bar's commitment to great taste and clean ingredients, this limited edition collaboration is simply mwah. And the best part is that 10% of sales go directly to Chef Keller's nonprofit, Mentor, that supports aspiring young chefs. Great taste, great nutrition, great mission. Go to IQBar.com today and enter promo code KELLER20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products plus free shipping. That's IQBAR.com, promo code KELLER20.